This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen.
Black and orange stray cats sitting on a fence.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
And you can't scratch fever.
How much is that doggy in the window?
And cats living together, mass hysteria.
Once again, Houston Matters goes to the dogs and cats as we discuss the care and feeding of your canine and feline friends with veterinarian Dr. Lori Teller from the Meyerland Animal Clinic and Texas A&M University. Dr. Teller, welcome.
Glad to be here.
And I will note up front that today's conversation is recorded, so we won't be taking any questions today, but we do welcome any about the dog or cat companion in your life for future installments at talk@houstonmatters.org. For today's discussion, I thought we could focus on diet and exercise, which are an endless challenge for us and often complicated, too, for the dogs or cats in our lives.
So true.
Why don't we start with food? What are the absolute essentials in a dog or cat's diet?
Similar to us, they do need protein and fat. Dogs can also eat carbohydrates. Cats need a little bit of carbohydrates, but they are true carnivores. And so the essentials to their diet are protein and some fat. But where they also are similar to us is the vitamins and minerals. Where it gets complicated for people, particularly people who want to home cook their pets' meals, is that while pets need these various macro and micronutrients, they need them in different quantities than
humans do. I was wondering if it also varies from breed to breed.
It does. Yes, in some ways. So it's important to understand your breed's unique requirements. So there are some breeds that should have lower levels of certain minerals in their diets. Other breeds may be more active, and it may not necessarily be the breed, but your dog. So it's not only breed, but also lifestyle.
Which vitamins and minerals are most important?
All of them. So, you know, of course, calcium and phosphorus and vitamin D and vitamin B. Dogs don't need vitamin C like people do because they can manufacture their own. So it's really important if you want to do a home-cooked diet to work with your veterinarian and perhaps even a veterinary nutritionist. There are some available online that will help you balance your dog or cat's diet appropriately. They'll take into consideration their breed, their lifestyle, their age, all of that, so that you can make sure you are getting the appropriate nutrients into your pet.
Many pet food manufacturers have certain categories of food for certain types of dogs or cats based on things like age or activity level or even some that are geared towards certain medical conditions, I gather.
Yes.
How can you determine not just whether you've picked the right food for your dog or cat, but when to change it up?
So always good to have a nice relationship with your veterinarian and discuss your nutritional concerns. But in general, if you have a puppy or kitten, it's a good idea to feed a food that is made for a puppy or kitten. And particularly when it comes to dogs, not only is it a puppy, but is it a large breed dog? Because the mineral needs, particularly of a large breed dog, are going to be different than a small breed dog just based on the amount of time it takes for them to grow. So there is something to be said for making sure the food you feed is labeled either for puppy and kitten or for all life stages. The senior pet side can get a little more complicated because different animals become seniors at different stages. Like a Great Dane becomes a senior citizen around 6 or 7 years of age, whereas a Chihuahua will be 12 or 13. So important, again, to have that conversation with your veterinarian. And again, it's not just going to be, is my pet a senior? Because if your pet is still walking 3 miles a day at the age of 13, that's going to be different than what a 13-year-old pet that spends all day on the sofa needs.
When it comes to those older pets, can nutrition impact arthritis, or can arthritis impact nutrition?
Yes. So managing arthritis in our pets has become so much better. One, as our pets live longer and they are more likely to develop arthritis. But we have so many different treatment modalities available to help our pets manage the discomfort of arthritis. It doesn't change what the number one thing is that pet owners can do, and that is to maintain a healthy weight for their pet. Joints break down faster when a pet is overweight and they're having to carry the extra weight, stressing their joints. So managing your pet's weight is still going to be number one, but there are diets out there made specifically for pets that are having some arthritic changes. There is some increased levels of omega fatty acids in those. There may be some joint supplements added to those. So from that standpoint, that can also help with arthritis. And really now when we have a dog or cat present with pain associated with arthritis, diet is now a piece of that. And allowing for appropriate levels of exercise is a piece of that. But there's some amazing new medications available and other non-medical treatments that can really help our pets with arthritis.
I want to get to exercise in a few minutes, but I have more food questions for you. First of all, what are some of the key things you should look for on the label of any pet food?
So you want to see if it's been through an AAFCO food trial.
What is that?
At the American Association, it's AAFCO, and now I'm just going to, it's going to go out of my head, but the American Association of Food something, something, something.
But it'll say AAFCO.
AAFCO, yes. Okay. Sorry, blanked on that. But they are responsible for making sure that foods meet a pet's minimal nutritional needs. So certainly pet food companies can go above that, but this will make sure it meets the minimum requirements for the macronutrients, protein, carbs, and fats, as well as the micronutrients, the various vitamins and minerals. So check that and make sure that's going to be at it. And then if your pet does have a special need, you may want to check the label for that. So there's some for pets with sensitive stomachs. So if your pet has a sensitive stomach, those kinds of things are great. There's some good ones out there for pets that have some skin problems. So all of those can be particularly helpful as well.
There are a lot of fresh pet food alternatives on the market these days. How do you know if they meet the nutritional needs of your pet?
So I would, again, look for the AAFCO label and do a little digging. The really good pet food companies also do actual food trials. So they have dogs or cats that are fed these diets for a period of time to make sure, one, that they're palatable so that the pet will eat it, but two, that it is going to meet the pet's nutritional needs over a certain amount of lifespan. Some may not do the food trials, but they will still meet the AAFCO minimum requirements, and then others may not have that label on it, and that would make me very nervous.
Some also prefer raw food diets for their pets. What does that mean exactly, and what's your take on them?
So raw means that the foods are not cooked, essentially. They are raw meats and raw vegetables and raw fruits. I have no complaints about raw fruits and vegetables as long as they've been washed. I do have real concerns about feeding raw meat to our pets. Dogs are not wolves anymore, just like we are not cavemen anymore. And our GI systems and our bodies overall have evolved from that. And raw food definitely has an increased risk of causing infection, not only in the pet, but also in the humans who live with them. Saying all of that, I realize there are still people out there that feed raw food, and if you are one of those, please just take all of the precautions necessary to protect you and your pet. Appropriate handling, washing all dishes, washing your pet's food bowl. And if anybody in the household is immunocompromised, then I would ask you to rethink that, or at least make sure they are staying away from all of it.
This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. We're talking with veterinarian Dr. Lori Teller. She joins us each month to discuss the care and feeding of your dogs and cats. We welcome questions for her, which we'll get to in future installments. Email us now or anytime at talk@houstonmatters.org. Some folks feed their pets scraps or leftovers from the table. Mm-hmm. Some pets only eat what their owners eat. Do you recommend that? And why not?
So I will admit that my pets get the occasional scraps. Pizza bones are a favorite, or the crust. And so for those kinds of things, as long as it's a minimal part of your pet's diet, I'm okay with it. As far as just having them on scraps, again, it goes back to, while dogs and cats overall need similar macro and micronutrients like we do, they need them in a different ratio. And so over the long term, that can result in an imbalanced diet. And the problem with nutritional-based diseases is that it takes a long time for the problems to show up. But then once they show up, it can also be a long time before they can be corrected, and some of them can't.
Some pet owners might contemplate a grain-free or gluten-free diet for their pets. Is that a good idea?
So grain-free has certainly been in the news over the past few years. And in general, I recommend against it, particularly for any breed that is prone to heart disease. But there was a higher number of dogs that were diagnosed with heart disease that did not have a genetic basis for that. And the common factor across all of those was grain-free diet. And I say that with a broad stroke, but narrowing it down to what grains may be involved has been a bigger challenge. And so again, I suggest talking to your veterinarian before you do feed a grain-free diet to your pet. And know what the risks are. There really does not seem to be a tremendous benefit for dogs to be on a grain-free diet.
You mentioned that health issues may not show up right away when a dog or a cat has a nutritional deficiency. When it does show up, what are we talking about? What kinds of things?
And that depends on what the nutritional deficiency is. I've seen dogs with rickets because the diet they were getting did not have the appropriate balance of vitamin D and calcium and phosphorus. And that takes a long time to show up. And then when we do see what looks like rickets, we have to figure out, was this a diet issue? Is there an internal issue in the animal's body, whether related to its parathyroid glands or its kidneys or things like that? But once we've figured out what it is, we can't always fix it. And so that would be an example. Liver disease can be another example. Many years ago, cats developed hyperthyroidism, not because of the food itself, but because of the kind of container it came in. Mm. And so that, of course, there is a genetic component to hyperthyroidism, but at least we were able to take the food container issues out of the picture from that.
All right, on to exercise. What are some things we can do to encourage our more sedentary dogs or cats to run around more, whether they're inside or outside?
Well, of course, the easiest thing is to take them for a walk, whenever that is the weather permitting. But in general, getting them out for a walk is going to be the best thing, particularly for our dogs. And as with any exercise plan, start slowly and build up. If your dog has some underlying issues, talk to your veterinarian first to see how to manage those. But walks are by far the easiest and the best. And it's not only the physical activity, but also the mental stimulation that comes along with that. Dogs like to get out there and smell things and check things out. If you have a super active dog, like a border collie or a Jack Russell Terrier, things like that, you can consider going even running. So jogging, running, for a lot of dogs, that's a very appropriate activity as well.
Is there any reason when it comes to active dogs and cats to try to slow them down at all?
Not if they're healthy. You do need to be careful while they're still growing. So limiting running in puppies, don't try to train them to do a half marathon. But otherwise, no. If they don't have joint problems and they're otherwise okay, then go for that.
How about those of us with active dogs, but whom do have ourselves joint problems, can't really keep up with them?
Right. So finding other ways to let your dogs run, or, you know, hire somebody to walk or run with your dog. Or maybe there's a nice teenager down the street who needs a little extra cash and their parents are tired of them sitting on the living room couch playing video games. Maybe they'll take your dog for a walk or a run. But you can play games in the backyard. Certainly a dog that likes to retrieve can fetch. Dogs that are lovers of the water can go swimming. So find a pool if you don't have one. A lot of the dog parks have some big lakes and ponds where your dog may be able to swim. Dog parks can also be a great place for your dog to be more active as well. I know we've talked about dog parks and things to consider before. So make sure your dog is appropriate for a dog park. Cats, laser pointers, string toys, little robotic mice, all of those things are a great way to stimulate them. Also, puzzle toys to feed, either dogs or cats, can also help stimulate them. And if they have to bat the toy around and chase it around the house to get the kibble to fall out, then that's another way to help increase their exercise as well. And then if you have the time and the inclination, of course, doing agility with your dog or fly ball, those are other great ways to increase their exercise.
We were talking earlier about older dogs and cats and diet. What options exist for those dogs and cats getting up there in years that have been active but maybe are starting to slow down as they age? What do you do when your pet's mind is willing but the body is starting to require a limit on activity?
So definitely walking is still a really good exercise to help keep muscles strong, and that's an important thing. Their dogs and cats can get muscle wasting just like people can as we get older, and so helping to maintain that muscle strength, even if it's a slow walk, but it's what your pet can do, that's perfect. So that's certainly something to keep in mind, but they may be shorter distances as well. So even if it's to the end of the block and back, or even if it's just a lap around your backyard, but something to get them up and moving some, those are really good things. And then, of course, make sure that you've looked at the other things to help manage pain and discomfort associated with arthritis. The same with cats. They can still chase a laser pointer or a feather toy, those kinds of things, but the play periods may be shorter and a little bit slower.
Whether it's diet or exercise related, when should you be concerned if your dog or cat puts on a little bit of weight, and when shouldn't you be so concerned about it?
If your dog or cat is putting on weight and it is not related to decreased activity and excessive intake of calories, you should definitely be concerned. Is there an underlying metabolic process that's going on? Like, we'll see dogs that get hypothyroidism, so they have too little thyroid, they can gain some weight, and there are other disease conditions out there that may impact your pet's health as well. And so any weight gain that cannot be accounted for is cause for a visit to the veterinarian.
Finally, we were talking earlier about the scenario where maybe we're not able to keep up with our dogs or cats to the degree that they would want. How much are the exercise habits of our dogs and cats influenced by us?
Oh, tremendously, because we pretty much control their exercise. So important for us to be getting out. They have shown that children who grow up with a dog in the household tend to be more active, usually because mom's saying, go take the dog for a walk, or things like that, or the family goes out for a walk. So we are in general in control of our dogs and our cats' exercise patterns and have tremendous amount of influence over it.
Dr. Lori Teller is a veterinarian with the Meyerland Animal Clinic and teaches veterinary medicine at Texas A&M University. Dr. Teller, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you.